So today's story, as Pastor Elijah read a few minutes ago, comes from the Gospel of John. And if you remember, we've been hanging out in the Gospel of John for the last 3 weeks, together with the lectionary text this time of the year. We started with the Samaritan woman at the well and Jesus offering her living water. And then last week, we read the story and discussed the story about the man born blind who Jesus gave back his sight and the way that he testified about his healing and who Jesus really was. Today's story is primarily known for Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead, the very end of the story. But there's a whole lot that happens before we get to that moment where Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead. So we wanted to spend just a minute at the beginning sort of situating this story. There's an interesting thing going on in the Gospel of John. And basically what happens is the gospel writer is assuming more or less that you know the end of the story. You know the basics of the whole story even. And there's a way in which, because of this, time is a little bit fluid. So at the beginning of this chapter, when it's talking about Mary, it references her as the one who anointed Jesus's feet with perfume. But the reality is that doesn't happen until the next chapter. But the gospel writer is trying to tell an orderly account, not trying to tell this story from scratch in some ways. And so the gospel writer is not so worried about giving away the ending or the suspense in that way. In fact, much of this story seems to be setting up the final week of Jesus's life. So there's lots of clues that this is the setup for the passion, if you will. First of all, they're in Bethany, and Bethany is only 2 miles from Jerusalem. So they're getting very, very close to the place where Jesus, where it's all going to go down, if you will. Second, we also see that the disciples are really, really anxious. In fact, they try to talk Jesus out of going back to Judea. They know that Jerusalem will be dangerous, perhaps even leading to death, maybe even their own deaths. In fact, Thomas says, just before this story begins, "Let us go too, that we may die with Jesus." In other words, they get the gravity of this moment, and it's a pretty intense one, if you will. Given all that this story is holding and anticipating, it's a particularly emotional story, like Pastor Maria talked about with our children a little bit earlier. It contains the death of Lazarus, and Mary and Martha are grieving. We find that Jesus is disturbed, troubled, angry, and even cries. Some of the Jews are grieving, and with Mary, when they see Lazarus rise, they believe. And others get angry and go to the chief priests and Pharisees to push for Jesus to be killed. And it's a confusing story. The disciples who've been closest to Jesus all along are really struggling to understand it all. And we know in this moment that Jesus is facing death. So given where this story is situated, we thought it would be worth talking for a minute about where we are situated in this moment. We've been talking a fair amount this week about grief and anticipatory grief. Do you want to say a little more about sort of where we find ourselves right now?
Yeah, so let me link in the comments this article that's really kind of shaped our imagination some this week too, as we've been thinking about how each of these characters in this story are all experiencing anticipatory grief. Even Jesus, who, not to get lost in the quagmire of theology, but in some sense seems to know the outcome of the story, and of this moment, is still deeply experiencing anticipatory grief. So a definition from this article that we just linked: anticipatory grief is that feeling we get about what the future holds when we're uncertain. And usually that feeling centers on death. We feel it when someone gets a dire diagnosis, or when we have the normal thought that we'll lose a parent or a loved one someday. Anticipatory grief is also more broadly imagined futures, and look, stay with us here as we think about the moment that we're in. There is a storm coming. There's something bad out there. With a virus, this kind of grief is so confusing for people. Our primitive mind knows that something bad is happening, but you can't see it. And this breaks our sense of safety. We're feeling that loss of safety. And the author says, or the person being interviewed, I don't think we've collectively lost our sense of general safety like this. Individually or as smaller groups, people have felt this, but altogether, this is new. We're grieving on a micro and a macro level. And I think, you know, this is a lot of what we've been processing together too, is the way in which this is deeply personal, individual, domestic. It's sort of in each of our own lives grief, and yet we're aware that this grief has tentacles and is collective, and we're all experiencing it. So it really struck us, you know, this week to be facing this text, this story where the disciples and Mary and Martha and Jesus are all experiencing this storm coming. That, you know, the story before the part we read is that they know that he's sick and they're kind of waiting it out, right, to see what's going to happen. They are experiencing anticipatory grief. And, you know, as we thought about, you know, imagine this series, which we keep saying, you know, months ago, I think we certainly had in mind that each of us would be coming with our own kind of personal contextual stories, our own personal traumas, and we would be processing them and managing them personally as we engage this series and sort of sussed it out in our own personal lives. But I mean, you know, never would we have imagined that we would engage a series on trauma and how to be resilient and actually all be in different ways experiencing this together, that this would be a collective anticipatory grief. So, you know, we're processing it with you about as probably as fast or as slow as you are. So yeah. A little bit about anticipatory grief.
Yeah. And I think it's important, first of all, to acknowledge that grief is actually real and that it's there. And it's a key piece of the work in our resilience regarding trauma, period. One of the things that the author says is that our emotions need motion. Like, in other words, when we try to sort of shove our anxiety down or our fears or whatever, our sadness, anything it is we're feeling at the moment, we can get stuck and things can start to kind of come out sideways. But to the extent that we can actually give ourselves the space to feel what it is we're feeling, if it's sadness, if it's the fact that we're anxious or scared or afraid, if we can actually stop and feel that, it's really helpful to us in this moment. The key, though, that the author presses, and I think is an important one, is to find some balance in what we're thinking, so that when it starts to overwhelm us, we find ways to bring ourselves back to the present moment. It's not that the worst case scenario is impossible or that we can turn off all of our anxieties. But that's only a piece of the story too. So part of it is to figure out how to come into the present moment. We've talked about doing this in various ways, but the author of this story talked about, like, one tactic is that you can name five things in the room. A chair, Maria, a cup of tea. I hear a violin player next door. Find ways to really kind of ground ourselves in the present moment. And as we turn back to the story of Jesus and Mary and Martha and the raising of Lazarus, Interestingly enough, I think one of the key central moments in the story is the one shared early on in what Pastor Elijah read this morning. And it's a moment between Jesus and Martha. Martha comes to Jesus and she lays out her complaint to Jesus. And when she does, Jesus makes a promise to her. Your brother will rise again. But as you heard, she's not all that consoled by this promise. She's like, yeah, I get all that, that he'll rise again on the last day, but that doesn't soften my grief now. This moment is really about Martha seeing Jesus as the resurrection and the life here and now, not in some afterlife or good place where we go after death. I want to read again, just briefly, verses 25 through 29. Jesus says to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me will live, even though they die. Everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? She replies, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, God's son, the one who is coming into the world. And the commentator in my Bible says that this is exactly the confession that the Gospel of John is after. This is the whole purpose that the Gospel writer stopped to write this orderly account so that readers, you and me, readers that would come after might also see and be able to declare, yes, I believe that you are the Christ, God's son, the one who is coming into the world here and now. God with us, incarnate in the flesh. I want to talk a little bit about.
Yeah, I think too, what we, you know, it's worth reflecting upon that what we see in this story is Jesus is reminding us that while everything isn't always in our control, and I think we may feel like that list is pretty long right now, there are things that are within our control. And again, we're the kind of community that talks about that from a personal to a policy level, right? So in the midst, we see Jesus in the midst of a space that arguably is death dealing, still find a way to bring life, right? Jesus is bringing life in a space that is death dealing. So then the reflection question for me, and I think for all of us, is what death dealing spaces are we either currently finding ourselves in or are preparing to find ourselves in where we might be participants in bringing life? And I think about, you know, that's large scale too, right? Right now, if Immigration Customs Enforcement released detained immigrants, they would be bringing life into death dealing spaces, knowing that the system is not prepared for a virus to run itself through detention centers and places where people are caged and violated. They could choose to bring life into death dealing spaces. In prisons right now, people with misdemeanors ought to be released, right? We ought to continue to be thinking about economic and social ways that we're meeting people's daily basic needs in the midst of a crisis. We can be bringing life into death-dealing spaces, and Jesus is bringing life to this death-dealing space in profound and palpable ways. So I invite you to be reflecting this week, in what ways are you participating in bringing life in the midst of death, even as you face your own anticipatory, very real anticipatory grief? And how do we care for each other as we do that challenging, exhausting, and beautiful work together, even from our homes online? Lots to keep reflecting on, and we need to keep doing it together. So we're grateful for this space to keep doing it.
Indeed.
So again, I hope you hear and receive that invitation. Where are you bringing life? Where are you facing anticipatory grief? How are you caring for yourself and each other? How are we naming the big feelings that we're holding and carrying these days? These are your invitations to discipleship, to follow. And so Tim will now lead us in our hymn of discipleship. Pues si vivimos.